following is a presentation of Learfield IMG College. From the Georgia Southern Sports Network, powered by Learfield IMG College.
Wake up, Eagle Nation! Touchdown, Georgia Southern!
This is Inside Eagle Nation, your all-access look into Eagle athletics.
Taking a look through all the other action in Georgia Southern athletics this past week. A lot of road action. A lot of teams hitting the old I-16 out of town.
Getting on the steel horse and taking us to parts north, south, west, wherever. Can't really go too much farther east.
Now, let's return to the Learfield IMG College studios. Here are your hosts, Colin Lacey and Danny Reed.
That's a fact, Jack.
Welcome into another edition of Inside Eagle Nation, live here from our bunker studio in the basement of Hanner Fieldhouse.
Make it feel like we're under attack.
Well, sometimes it might feel like it.
I mean, BYU was throwing some bombs last Saturday, but...
That's accurate.
It's fun to watch.
Colin Lacey alongside the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, as football's starting to wind down one more week in the 2021 edition of Georgia Southern Football this week. It's hate week against Appalachian State.
That's hard to believe.
Yeah, it is. Men's and women's basketball a couple of weeks into the season. The rest of the fall sports starting to wind down a little bit. Volleyball finishing up. We'll dive into everything as we go throughout this week of Inside Eagle Nation. Also, Thanksgiving week, so it's a little quiet around campus. The students out because of Thanksgiving holidays this entire week, so you don't have to wait in lines for a whole lot of food places around here this week.
And something that we can probably consider how it's going to impact our teams going forward is that it's going to be all morning practices this week.
Yeah.
Now, there are some teams football-wise in the conference. Texas State, South Alabama have done morning practices this year, but I just wonder, by getting them up earlier, knowing that it's a little bit of a fractured week with the Thanksgiving holiday, how they're going to respond going up to Boone, especially for football and then for basketball. Big one up in Atlanta on Black Friday.
You can join the conversation at any point this evening by texting us to 912-274-3607. You can tweet at GS Sports Network or comment right here on the Facebook live stream. We will dive right into it with Georgia Southern Volleyball down at the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. Got a big victory 3-1 against ULM on the opening round on Thursday evening. Again, a 3-1 victory over ULM that put them against UTA on Friday. It was a really hard-fought set, but UTA would come out on top 3-2 over Georgia Southern on Friday afternoon. Really, really tough match for Georgia Southern and UTA. It came down to the last couple of points in the fifth set, but Georgia Southern's season comes to a close, falling to UT Arlington down in the second round of the Sun Belt Conference Tournament. But a 17-11 overall record, 9-7 in conference play. You really saw this team improve from a year ago to this year, and we had Coach Willis on the podcast a couple of times this year.
With the hammer.
Yeah, with the hammer. You saw not just on the court change, but the culture of this program change a lot, and it's really getting to the program that Coach Willis has talked about since he got to Statesboro.
Most victories since joining the Sun Belt, most wins since 2013. I mean, at various times this year, they had players out because of COVID. They had multiple starters that didn't make the trip to Foley, and after they were struggling quite a bit against ULM in that first set, they just took control, got ULM completely out of their game, dominated the rest of the way. And even against Arlington, after getting down 2-0 to a team that had swept them here in the regular season, they get set 3, they get set 4, much in the same way, they took control of the match. And they were up 12-10 in set 5, 3 points away from a chance to go and be one match away from a championship. But couple of controversial calls. You had the ball that went up in the rafters.
I was about to say, the one that hit the roof. Yeah. Aaron and I were sitting at the high school game we were at watching it, and with the screen, you couldn't see where the ball went. You just saw it come back down, and somehow Georgia Southern got it over the net.
Yeah.
Then they come back and say it hit the rafters out of bounds, yeah, which in turn gives the points to UTA.
And I think from there, UT Arlington took control, but that team, that staff, there was a different feel this year, getting a chance to watch them multiple times at Hanner. I thought Baylor Bumford was outstanding in the tournament, and yeah. I know that she's already announced she is coming back for next season. She had the opportunity to use the COVID waiver year. They're going to lose multiple players, though. Madison Brown's career is over after more than 3,000 assists, the impact that she had on this program. She's also the SAC president for 2021. I would just hope that this is only the beginning. I'm pretty sure it is, but I can remember us talking on this podcast months ago whenever we said this was going to be the year for Georgia Southern volleyball.
Yeah.
It was a great year,
yeah.
And now there's potential for it to be even better. He just got his best recruiting class. He's got an even better one coming in for next year. It's going to be a youthful team, but one that is going to be very hungry. Ashlyn Lovett, freshman of the year, just outstanding how she was down the stretch. And I think that this is a team that is well-positioned to make a run at it in 21.
No doubt. Going to be
22. Sorry.
Looking forward to seeing what 22 in this offseason looks like for Georgia Southern volleyball. We'll have to get Coach Willis in here at least one, maybe a couple, five times.
Probably closer to five.
Yeah. Move on to Georgia Southern women's basketball. Just one match or one game since we last spoke to you. It was on Saturday out in San Diego after Georgia Southern, well, I guess since the last time we talked, Georgia Southern defeated FIU 81-74 in overtime.
Right.
It all starts to run together of when we were here, when we were there.
Yeah, but wait a few more years.
Yeah. 81-74 victory over FIU on Wednesday. It was Greek Day, a really good atmosphere inside Hanner Fieldhouse. And then on Saturday, made their way out to San Diego State out in San Diego, California. It's a little bit of homecoming for Deja Holmes. And so you've got a 65-57 San Diego State victory on Saturday. They will be playing tonight at San Diego Christian, just down the road from San Diego State. It's an 11 p.m. tip-off tonight, which... 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock? 7 o'clock.
8 o'clock
local.
You had Central.
I know,
so
I was
well.
Close.
See, you have told me for years that Central was the only one that tripped you up.
It was. Until this moment. But here Eastern time, it's an 11 o'clock tip off at San Diego Christian. You can watch that one on the video stream on San Diego Christian. You can find the link on gseagles.com. And then, Danny Reed,
ooh,
you've got the Gata Turkey Throwdown.
Gobble, gobble.
Georgia Southern women's basketball going to be hosting South Carolina State and Indiana State in a multi-team event inside Hanner Fieldhouse Friday against South Carolina State, a 1 p.m. tip, and then Saturday, 3:30 the tip against Indiana State, again right here in inside Hanner Fieldhouse.
So after sunning and funning for the last few days out in San Diego, they can come back home, fill themselves with turkey and dressing and canned cranberry sauce, and then whip a couple of opponents this weekend.
Correct. I think that's the plan, in that order.
In that Durea. The funny thing is about the San Diego State experience, I didn't realize that that was the front end of a women's men's doubleheader.
I didn't either.
And the UT Arlington men followed get San Diego State, so we missed a chance to catch up with Josh Sowers.
Yeah, Josh texted me while we were at Paulson Stadium against BYU and said, man, you couldn't have come out here with your women's team? I'm like, what is he talking about? I didn't realize. And then Chad Jackson, the sports information director for women's basketball, he had texted me after and said, the UTA radio guy said to tell you, hey. So, hey.
Chad was surprised that the radio guy stopped.
Yeah, I know, right? Weird. Turning it over to Georgia Southern men's basketball. They took on Bob Jones on Tuesday a week ago. 103-51, the final score inside Hanner Fieldhouse. Then headed up to Sparkle City for a multi-team event. Took on the Hampton Pirates on Saturday. 86-66, the victory up in Spartanburg. And then the host Wofford Terriers got the best of Georgia Southern on Sunday. 70-52, the final score of that one. But really good start for Georgia Southern men's basketball. It's the yes. first time that men's and women's basketball had both been 3-0. Men's got to 4-0 before falling to Wofford on Sunday.
You know, you were with me for the Bob Jones game. And in the first half, there was that stretch where the Eagles made 15 in a row. They were up over 76% for the first half. They shoot 72 for the game, and they end up setting a school record. Manny Harris scores the first 7 points of his career. Grant Weatherford made the first three of his Eagle career, then took a charge on the other end because that's exactly what you would expect him to do after making his first three in Statesboro. And then getting a chance to take that team to Spartanburg for the multi-team event. Hampton, a team that is relatively new to the Big South Conference. A lot of new blood on that roster. Georgia Southern jumping out 18-0. Didn't have much of an issue. They played really well on defense. Andre Saversoff continues to lead this team. And then they locked up with host Wofford just on Sunday. And that may be the best opponent Georgia Southern sees. And I think that Wofford might be a little bit better than Georgia Tech. And I know that Georgia Tech is coming up on Friday, and we will get to that. But that is a really skilled team. The influence of Mike Young is still heavy on that program. Head coach has been Jay McCauley for the last few years. They were picked third in the SoCon this year. But you know they're going to be able to shoot. You know they're going to rebound. And you know they're going to defend you every single possession. Eagles were right with them for about 23 minutes. They were trailing by two early in the second half, but then Wofford started to knock down its threes. Eagles got a little bit out of sorts on defense and just way too many turnovers in the half court. I think they committed 19 for the contest, but that was nice to have that game there, because after a 4-0 start, you need to know where you are. Game like South Florida helps. Game like Hampton helps. Ball State on the opener helps. But they needed to play someone else like that on their floor. And look, even though they lost by 18 points, this is definitely a much improved team. We've raved about how much Andre Saversoff has gotten better. And once these guys get comfortable in the half-court offense, they can limit their turnovers. Defensively, they're going to be in just about every game, because they played well enough on defense to win. They just couldn't put it in the hole when they needed to.
They will take the next step and move up to Atlanta with a 4-1 record against the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets coming up on noon inside McCamish Pavilion. It's on ACC Extra, but also right here on the Georgia Southern Sports Network. 11:30 the airtime. You will have the call up from McCamish Pavilion.
So I got to be careful about how much turkey I eat on Thursday. That's an early tip on Friday.
Yeah, but that's plenty of time. Thanksgiving, you go to bed early because you're full of turkey and dressing and potatoes. And
this one's cool, though. I haven't seen Georgia Tech in 23 years. It's one of those where I can still remember Mark Byington talking about wanting to play Georgia Tech. They never would. Wanting to play Georgia took until 2 years ago before Georgia finally agreed to play the Eagles, and the Eagles almost won that game up at Stegman. You were with me that night right before Christmas two years ago.
Thanks, Anthony Edwards.
Oh, gee.
Still one of the biggest humans I've ever seen in my life.
He's a phenomenal player. Anyway, have not been up there since they did the renovations in McCamish about 8 years ago is when, or correction, 2012 is when they opened the new arena. It used to be Alexander Memorial Coliseum. They tore up the seats. They redid the floor. I remember being up there with the Citadel when it just reopened. Gorgeous arena, and they've done even more improvements to it since then. They actually play tonight against Charleston Southern at home. But to give you a brief look at them, stop with Michael DeVoe. He is as talented a scorer as there is in this country. He's scoring about 23 a game, a lefty, somebody that was honorable mention all ACC just last year. He is going to lead that attack, and you know that when you face a team that's coached by Josh Pastner, it's going to be that very confusing zone defense. It's a lot like what Ron Hunter used to do for Georgia State. It's a 1-3-1 that apparently it changes form between man and zone sometimes in the middle of a possession. And Pastner will use flashcards on the sideline with numbers on them to indicate what he wants his defense to do almost on a pass-by-pass basis. So while they're locking in here, they got to figure out exactly what he wants them to do too.
It's almost like those football play cards. You see the massive cards being held up by a GA behind the signal callers, and it'll have like an Xbox logo, different logos throughout.
They've also started to force turnovers a little bit more. Before, his defense was more or less just trying to get you to take a tough two-point jump shot, but now they're more apt to get steals, force turnovers. They want to get in transition and use that athleticism with DeVoe and a guy like Jordan Usher, who could be a double-double waiting to happen.
Getting a noon tip-off on Friday afternoon as Georgia Southern will take on the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets inside McCamish Pavilion. Again, they play tonight against Charleston Southern, but have a couple of relatively big victories against Stetson, against Lamar, beat Georgia on Friday, and then they will take on Charleston Southern tonight. And then Georgia Southern, Black Friday basketball up in Hotlanta. You a big Black Friday shopper?
No.
I was about to say, I probably could have guessed that one.
And being we are going where we are going, traffic.
Yeah, even more no.
Might need to rent a helicopter. and then we got to figure where to land it and then drive the rest of the way to Boone, because I'm not sure we can get a helicopter far enough with the elevation.
Yeah, I'm going to guess probably not.
But we'll be up there at some point. We'll get settled in for an afternoon kickoff against the Mountaineers on Saturday to wrap up the regular season. Maybe give them some ill feelings going into the conference championship the following weekend in Lafayette, and maybe win back-to-back games on the Rock.
How about it?
That doesn't happen very much.
No, it doesn't. Something else that doesn't happen a whole lot is giving BYU a game, but that's exactly what Georgia Southern did this past Saturday. It was senior day at Allen E. Paulson, just shy of 21,000 packing into Allen E. Paulson.
Great crowd.
34-17 ends up being the final, but at the half, BYU only led by a field goal. It was 20-17 at the half, and you were thinking, man, Connor Sigelski is your starting quarterback, who 3 weeks ago wasn't on any depth chart.
Right.
He's your starter. He comes in, and we had talked to both Coach Whitley and Coach Roos, said that that guy's going to be in the game. It's somebody that has a lot of confidence, somebody that has the winning mentality coming from Marist. This is somebody that's not afraid, and they were right.
That's a program that's been good to Georgia Southern athletics on the whole. Think back to Eagle baseball. Mike Economos played his prep ball in Marist. But for Sigelski to come in for his college debut against the number 14 team in the country on senior day in front of a sellout crowd at Paulson, that's asking a lot. But he played like a guy who had nothing to lose. Hadn't started a game in 2 years. He finished his career at Marist against Oconee County and stepped in like he hadn't missed a beat. Hit his first six passes, ended up going 11 for 14, did have the unfortunate interception in the fourth quarter, but safety Jacob Robinson made a ridiculous play over the top of Amari Jones. You can't fault Sigelski for that kind of throw, just trying to fit it in the corner route. But think as how that first half went. Georgia Southern got down 14-3 after that first drive went almost 8 minutes for a field goal, but it was a field goal instead of a touchdown. Still, a couple third down conversions. The first play of the game, though, I loved because it's exactly what you needed on a number of fronts. Sigelski's first play, a pass to Logan Wright, simple pass, get his confidence up, and what does Logan do? Finds his way through three blockers, runs over a safety, picks up 13, and then the sidelines up, the crowd's up thinking, all right, this is the tone we needed to set. We talked about that. You have to be physical early against BYU, otherwise they're going to get you. I would have loved to have seen a touchdown, but the fact that the Eagles scored was wonderful.
Yeah.
But then getting down 14-3, only to see back-to-back touchdowns by Georgia Southern. Now, they recovered an onside kick. Mizell Williams was ruled to be out of bounds. It was close, probably the right call. BYU tried to get tricky on the fourth down play, which they ran against Coastal last year. They also messed it up there. But to lead with 6 minutes left in the first half against BYU, look, I know they're number 14 in the country, but that's an instance that you may not get to experience because I doubt that BYU is ever going to make the trip back to Statesboro.
No, I don't think so.
And then, unfortunately, the Eagles just didn't have enough depth down the stretch, and BYU's really good. We saw their deep passing game. We saw how good the running back Tyler Allgeier was.
Yeah.
First guy to go over 100 against Georgia Southern this year, and then they occupied the final 7:45 of the game, which showed in a microcosm that the Eagles just didn't have a chance to do anything in the second half. They didn't have the ball at 19 snaps after halftime.
No, and something that you brought up, Georgia Southern got down 14-3, and at that point you're thinking, okay, this one could turn into a long day.
Yeah, buckle up.
But really like what you saw from Georgia Southern late in the second half, in the second quarter rather, the back-to-back touchdowns to Logan Wright, and you retake the lead against BYU. I don't know that anybody saw that one coming.
It made me think a little bit about the Troy game when Georgia Southern was down 21 points on the road, came back to tie the game, and had a chance to go ahead at least late in the fourth quarter. Ultimately, that did not work out. Horse of a different color when you're talking about the number 14 team of the country and you're down double digits at home. But the Eagles stuck to their plan. They were physical. They continued to be physical. They set that tone play after play after play. They got the fourth down stop against a team that was trying to go for the jugular pretty early. But watching Logan barrel in for back-to-back touchdowns, to see how that place sizzled with more than 20,000 in on senior day, BYU's fans traveled exceptionally well, really enjoyed the atmosphere. They actually collected food and supplies, I think over 12,000 pounds worth donated to local food banks. Didn't even realize that until after the game, so we certainly appreciate their humanitarian efforts and their first and probably only trip to Statesboro. But when the second half rolled around, you could see why BYU can do what it does to teams. That's why they've defeated five Power Fives this year, and they're undefeated against the Pac-12. Algiers an NFL running back. They've got a couple of wide receivers that are going to get looks. I think Jaren Hall could play whatever sport he wants to. He just has that ability to do whatever he wants to. And the Eagles couldn't get BYU behind the chains. They didn't have a tackle for loss because they were getting lost in all those bears up front of that offensive line. Just it was unfortunate, but a learning experience, and maybe that can help them against App, which we'll talk about here soon.
34-17, the final score. BYU tops Georgia Southern for the final regular season home game of the season. The season finale coming up on Saturday as Georgia Southern will head atop the mountain to take on the Appalachian State Mountaineers. And to help us break down the App State Mountaineers, some call him a professor, some call him the president, some call him... well, some other things, but the TV voice for the Appalachian State Mountaineers, David Jackson, joining us. David, appreciate you joining us, bud.
Gentlemen, I can't even begin to tell you what an honor it is to be here.
The honor is ours, Mr. Professor President.
Great to be back in Statesboro. I love this place, that place this time of year.
Start there. What is your favorite memory of Statesboro?
To be honest, Chad Callahan, when he was volleyball coach at Georgia Southern, former App State coach, one day rescued us during a basketball season because we forgot that there's a little thing called a blue law in Georgia on Sunday, and we were down there for Super Bowl weekend and only had chips and salsa, and Chad came to our rescue. That was special. Honestly, I will say this, and I mean this with all sincerity. You know, we've been talking a lot about the rivalry here this week already. It's just the appropriate week to do that. And it's always fun to kind of rehash some old memories. And I was educating some younger fans earlier today on Adrian Peterson and what an incredible talent he was to watch. And we got into this discussion, and both of you can appreciate this, that Adrian Peterson was on the same level of a Steph Curry, on the same level with an Armani Edwards and Randy Moss, conference brand ambassador, you know, the kind of people that you could write a script around and know that would hold up against the best that any other league or any other player at that time could do. So we went back and watched a few YouTube clips, you know, the old run against Youngstown and some other ones. And it just reminded me what a special talent that he was. And how our league was better for having guys like him and J.R. Revere and Josh Jeffries and some others, Lewis Ivory, all you know, making the SoCon such a powerhouse league at that time.
Before we dive into what this year's App State team looks like, wanted to pick your brain because you were the longtime voice of the App State Radio Network, and being able to see Appalachian State through a lot of different lenses, what have you seen the last 5-10 years from App State of how much they've grown from going from the SoCon to the Sun Belt to what they are being in the national limelight a lot of times?
Sure. I think that's a great question. And I'm sure that a lot of Georgia Southern observers are trying to use some of that, those same benchmarking tools as you evaluate how you've gone and certainly getting ready to go through some transition, where ultimately you hope to go as a program. And I think App State has done some of that, knowing that we were on the same timeline. I look at it as a measure of program maturity. You take it back to 2016. And App State, in their third year in that transition, played host to a nationally ranked Miami team. Brad Kaya was the quarterback. The Hurricanes had a little bit more sizzle to them at that point in time. And Miami flat drubbed App at the Rock. I mean, it was never close. Marcus Cox had a long run, a long touchdown run called back for a penalty, and that was all she wrote. That was the only chance that App had to keep that game close. You flash forward just a few years, really one recruiting cycle later, and that same App State team goes down to Miami and plays toe-to-toe with a team that is still playing for an opportunity at a bowl game this year. So I think that's what I see. I see a bigger athlete, a faster athlete, a stronger athlete that has come from recruiting with success at this level. And, you know, certainly Georgia Southern had a lot of success early, winning that first Sun Belt championship, bowl games under Coach Lunsford on the way to this point now. And I think that you would also argue that the athlete that Georgia Southern, the athlete that App State is going after today, looks different than the one that was being recruited in 2010, 11, and 12. Doesn't necessarily mean that that kid's heart's any bigger or smaller, or the kind of athlete that these kind of programs get is any different from a mental makeup. But physically, there's a difference. And I think that difference has translated for both programs on the occasional Saturday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday on throughout this transitional period.
What do you think about the fact that this is back at the end of the season for the second straight year, probably where it should be in terms of a lot of people on both sides of the ledger, yeah, and being able to end the season in Statesboro, end the season in Boone? I know how much it meant to people down here to see App in December after it was supposed to be on a Wednesday and then it got moved because of COVID. It seems like it's going to be on a Saturday and it's going to be here to stay.
I love it like that. You know, I think that that's what this new Sun Belt East has an opportunity to bring for us all, and that is meaningful regional rivalries, whether that means that App Georgia Southern play on the last week of the regular season, as I agree it should be, or if that's App Marshall or Georgia Southern Marshall, however we all work that arrangement out, you know, and the league schedules that, I think is good for Sunbelt football to showcase its best rivalries and its, and quite honestly, usually its best teams in a matchup like that. Just the same on the other side where we see Monroe and Lafayette battling this weekend. You know, that's what Thanksgiving football is like, right? And I like this a whole lot better than the old calendar used to be. It used to be that you would play, at least from App's perspective, and remember this all used to slot into alphabetical order some way, sub, I believe, Wofford in for Marshall. It used to be that you go through Furman, Georgia Southern, Wofford in three consecutive weeks, and for App, by the end of October, the meaningful games were over. You had this three-game run to the playoffs and hope that you got a good seed and maybe see one of those teams again. But I like it to where the meaningful games come at the end of the year, and you're, you know, for App, trying to set themselves up well to end the season on a good note, go to the Sun Belt Championship game with some momentum, means going through an arch rival to do that. And I think that will make for some interesting theater on Saturday.
Really good year. You talked about it with the victory over Troy this past week. They're in the Sun Belt Conference Championship game that's going to be the following week down in Louisiana. But it's an App State team, 9-2 on the year, 6-1 in Sun Belt play. But the first guy that we've got to talk about is Chase Bryce, coming in at quarterback, transferring in from Duke after he spent time at Clemson. What has he meant to this App State team?
Well, yeah, I think he's meant a veteran presence with a veteran group of receivers. Today we were talking at the press conference with Sean Clark afterward about just what this team looks like next year for App State. And, you know, you say goodbye to some guys. I mean, you joke, Danny, about me being the mayor. I think Thomas Hennigan was here when Daniel Boone walked through the town to found the place all these years ago. I mean, these guys have been household names for a long, long time. And that's what this COVID period has brought us, right? A group of, for App State, 22 seniors, a lot of those guys playing, a lot of those guys playing on offense. So Chase Bryce was the complement to all of that. You don't bring in a group of savvy receivers like a Hennigan, like a Malik Williams, and then trust that to a rookie to pilot that ship. You know, I'll take you back in App State days here, App State Georgia Southern rivalry days a little bit. Let's talk about Joe Burchett back in 2000. He was the last young quarterback that I remember App having with a group of senior receivers like this one would project. So back then it was Rashad Slade, it was Daniel Wilcox, it was a group like that. Troy Albee was another one. This group was set up very much like that. You know, you go get Bryce out of the portal, he brings you a stable, been there, done that kind of arm. Certainly he had to work through some things, but I think we can all honestly say too that he has got a much better offensive line at App State than he did at Duke. And I think that's shown in his play. He's been a little bit more elusive, and he's been a little bit more accurate in terms of his downfield passing because he's had more time to work with.
That's an offensive line that's given up only 8 sacks this year, third fewest in the country. And that's a thing that probably sets this year's offense away from what the App offense has been like moving to the FBS. It's been a lot of outside zone, the stretch play, whether it's been Tony Peterson calling the plays, but now Frank Ponce coming in. You can see elements of that, but it's been much more of a downfield passing attack, especially with getting Corey Sutton back. And when you have Malik Williams in the slot, that's something that not a whole lot of teams in this league can cover.
you know, it's a little different setup, Danny, where it's pass to run rather than run to pass. Yep. And for those that have watched App State over the course of now 10 straight years with a 1,000-yard rusher, you've seen it set up the opposite way, that usually it's guys like Marcus Cox that are able to get into the secondary and loosen up a defense from the back end, and then you can start attacking that mid to long-range passing game. This time it's been the other way around. It is utilizing guys like Malik Williams in the slot, Corey Sutton on the edge, Hennigan being that third down target that's been so reliable that softens up the run. And App's run game has gotten better as the game has gotten on. Part of that is due to depth, but I think part of that is offensive patience as well, and knowing that, you know, by the time you keep grinding away, Cam Peoples is going to get his 15 touches for 85 yards, and you're going to get, you know, 100 and change out of Nate Noel and about the same. And the bulk of their yardage is going to come in the third and fourth quarter rather than the first and second, because App is using their versatility to set up a good balanced offensive attack.
What's the mood around this team? You know that now you're going to be locked into the Sun Belt Championship game in 2 weeks, but it is Georgia Southern. It is senior day up at the Rock. What's the mood around this team going into this game?
They want it. You know, Sean Clark said today that unless a player was in a cast or a boot or needed a cane, that they were going to play this week. When talking about personnel, you know, there are some that would suggest, hey, maybe you lay back this week because of what's at stake next week. I don't think that either side would ever lay back against one another. And that's what I think is so great about this game, is that here, we've got all the postseason pecking order stuff sorted out at this point in time in terms of the championship game. But this game means something. A lot of recruiting battleground, trash talk opportunity that's out there between these two teams, certainly. They've had a history with each other. I think there's a score to settle for App State in this rivalry here, too, that you know, the last time that App probably had this much juice, maybe a little bit more back in 2019, but Georgia Southern was the team that came in here and ended those hopes. And there are still plenty of folks that remember what that pain was like and ultimately what that midseason game kept Appalachian State from having the opportunity to attain. So I think there's something there. And let's be honest, on the other side of this, too, there's an opportunity to write what has been a difficult season out on a positive script. And, you know, we all understand what the business side of this looks like. There are coaches that don't know whether they will be part of a transition or not. There are administrators, too, that probably feel that same element coming in this week. There's an excellent opportunity to write that script off on a very positive way. So there's something to be said there. There's a homecoming element of this too for Scott Sloan. I know that the last time he was here, he had a pretty good homecoming experience. So, you know, I think there's, with that comes though, familiarity and knowing that with Scott Sloan at the helm of a Georgia Southern defense, that in my opinion has not been the issue this year. You know, there's an opportunity to come in and play chess one more time with an old friend and see how the chips fall come, you know, about 5 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. But there is plenty of excitement. It's Thanksgiving week. Students are coming back. The last I heard, there were about 100 tickets that were left for this game. And it'll be another a classic scene at the Rock like we've seen for so many App State Georgia Southern battles over the years.
You know, we've already covered how you guys have stuck with your guns recruiting and how the caliber of athlete maybe from the early part of the decade to the end of the decade and now into the 2020s has changed just a little bit. But you guys have also invested in facilities, opening the new North End Zone facility for $50 million. I joked that in 17 we were up there, the Owens Fieldhouse was still there. 19 we went up there, the construction was beginning because the fieldhouse had been torn down, and now this is going to be our first look at that facility just off to our left from the press box. What has that meant to this program to be able to open a facility like that as this conference continues to move its way to maybe ascend to the very top of the G5?
You know, I think you bring up an interesting point in charting that progress, Danny, because I think as the conference grows and as we will see soon, a new geographic alignment on this side of the country, in this side of the Sun Belt, that is a whole lot more advantageous for Georgia Southern and Georgia State and App State alike. I think it is, from App State's perspective, it's nice to have something coming out of the ground now rather than just having that process start. You know, back in the transitional years in 13, 14, 15, 16, when Arkansas State was finishing off a new facility and Troy was getting into theirs and Louisiana was updating theirs, you know, I felt like App State and Georgia Southern were, you know, they were so new into this, they were a little bit behind that facilities curve. And App has caught up and now go into this new Sun Belt world order with fresh new facilities, it's certainly, you know, great for recruiting when you're building things and putting new buildings out. And it certainly is a whole lot nicer facility than Owens Fieldhouse was, having some previous time in there. But I think it also speaks to the stability of the program, where you've got donor support, ticket sales, all of the things that drive that kind of change. You're not building extra facilities just to see a whole bunch of aluminum. They're building these facilities because there's demand there. And it's, you know, certainly premium seating on a day like Saturday might present. We'll have a premium feel to it, cutting some of the elements out. But it's just another show, like you mentioned. Two programs that I think have weathered the storm pretty well. Take this year out of the equation. You know, I think that in a traditional transitional sense, App State and Georgia Southern have done what the Sun Belt needed them to come in and do, and that is raise the profile of the league. And now, partly because of that, you know, these two programs are set to be the standard bearers on a East Coast that's going to be awfully football savvy by the time all is said and done.
You look at the defensive side for this App State team, and it's always an App State team that has a really good defense and a lot of the same cast of characters that you've seen from the last couple of years. Demetrius Taylor, Sean Jolly, so many names that year after year after year. What has been the big key for this year's defense to set itself apart for App State?
You know, I think that every team that's successful right now can across the country can point back to veteran presence and certainly bringing guys like Demetrius Taylor, DeMarco Jackson back into that mix certainly is helpful. Jolly has been, you know, marred by injuries. This has not been the season that he would have liked to have had, but he's still got opportunity there, right? You know, he's got a rivalry game plus, you know, at least two postseason opportunities coming up ahead of him. So hopefully that'll work out well. I think with this group, though, maybe a little bit different than the offense, it's been some of the other characters that have emerged during this. You know, you look back to the midpoint of the year for Stephen Jones, when all of a sudden every pass that was thrown in the air, he decided to catch and turn that into a national name for himself. One of the top defensive backs in the entire country, following Clifton Duck, maybe in that line of App State DBs that have gone on to play so well. I think a guy that doesn't get enough run right now is Jordan Earl at the nose tackle position, is playing incredibly well at the front of that attack. And with those three down linemen playing well, Dale Jones has been able to dial up the blitz a lot more effectively. That pressure has turned into turnovers, especially here over the last four or five games, where you have seen that look like a traditional App State defense, where pressure comes from the back in, and all of a sudden, you know, you've got two or three interceptions at the end of a ball game, and you look up and App's won the turnover battle. This group has got some newer names sprinkled in with it. I think it goes back to the veteran presence again, like I mentioned, but it is interesting to see some new faces start to emerge out of a group that will also, like its offensive brethren, graduate quite a few people by the time next year rolls around.
Somebody that we've talked about, not necessarily on air, but you, Danny, and I have talked about the last couple of years, Sean Clark taking over as head coach for this App State team. He knows App State. He bleeds black and gold. Being able to see what he's done with his program, you've seen him from a couple of different standpoints. What has it really been like having him back at the helm?
You know, I think that you guys can attest to what it means to have a Georgia Southern person at the helm of the Georgia Southern program. Yeah. You know, I think with App State, you know, where you had such a long line, and let's be honest now, Jerry Moore was not an App State guy. He became an App State guy with his longevity. You know, he helped give birth to Scott Satterfield from not only a player's standpoint, but a coach's standpoint. You have the 1 year where Eli Drinkwitz came in and took advantage of a lot of the seeds that Coach Satterfield and his staff planted. Now you have Sean Clark being the continuity guy that was here that entire time from Satterfield's transition, stayed with Drinkwitz, and now has the head of the program. Despite, you know, the low-hanging fruit here in this conversation to say, well, it's an App State guy, that's why. I think there's not enough to be said about finding somebody that can be that transitional link. especially with such a quick turnaround in coaching tenure here. It wasn't quite Arkansas State, but it was awfully close to it. So having a familiar voice, having somebody that can build continuity in recruiting, keep some assistant coaches around that certainly means something there. I think with our two universities here, and I say this as an App State grad, speaking to folks that are very familiar with Georgia Southern, I think it matters when you have somebody understand where the opportunities are and where the challenges are, and not necessarily to accentuate challenges, but to stay away from them. There is efficiency that is gained when it's somebody that gets it at the helm of the program. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, how that transpires, obviously, with Georgia Southern's transition here, a little bit different script at the top, but how that staff is rounded out to make that a Georgia Southern team. App State has largely stayed in that category over the course of the last several decades now, and I think that pays off in consistency of recruiting. Certainly kids know what App State is looking for when they come out on the trail, and App knows what they're looking for when they go and try to bring in the next crop of soon-to-be household names in this long-standing rivalry.
And we covered the fact that you were the longtime voice on the radio for App State for 15 seasons, but you've been a professor at App State, your alma mater. You're also currently serving the Boone Chamber of Commerce, and from everything I see on social media, they are lucky to have you in that spot, and I'm not just saying that. But now getting back and doing what you're doing for your alma mater, what does it mean to you to be calling games for App again?
That's a great question. And first of all, you're completely full of crap.
Best parking in Boone. Best parking in Boone behind the Chamber of Commerce.
That's what it's about. That's what it's about. Danny is just trying to butter me up so I get that. Hey, I'm coming to breakfast on Saturday. Can I come to your office? Yeah, so I get that. I appreciate that. But no, it's I've enjoyed jumping back into it. It was 5 full years out, and certainly Adam Witten's done a great job with the radio network side of it, and it was important to me that he sign off on this opportunity for me to come back in this small way. Avery Hall is working games with us again. I know a lot of Georgia Southern fans will remember our dynamic duo back in the day, sparring back and forth with Nate Hirsch and the crew back years and years ago. It was fun. You know, we had such a great camaraderie there. I think that's the part that I've enjoyed more than anything is just kind of reconnecting with people that have been around and being able to tell stories again. Certainly the dynamic is a little bit different. Despite what Eagle fans may think, we're going to try to play it pretty straight down the middle on Saturday afternoon. I enjoy a rivalry broadcast. You know, I think that there is something that we can add to that storytelling. Avery played in this rivalry. You know, I was certainly around for some of the most memorable moments of that. Wins and losses, tight finishes, blowouts. I can remember many rides home from Statesboro wondering, just how is it that this drive takes so long to get back? Because, it's just down in the dumps. But on the other hand, I think both teams have enjoyed their share of successes against one another. That's what I missed in not being able to do this for something that has a little bit more than just quite honestly a paycheck attached to it. There's heart and soul put into these kinds of games. I've been fortunate enough to keep at it here over the last few years and get a little bit more into the ESPN3 side of it, and certainly have enjoyed keeping my feet in it, but Saturday is going to mean a little bit something different, and it'll be fun to do that. You know, the first game I called, Danny, not anywhere near on this magnitude, but was App State Elon back at the beginning of the year, and that was another old SoCon rivalry rekindled. There were some good years when Elon was actually relevant in the SoCon there for the 45 minutes that they were, and Scott Riddle and Terrell Hudgens and some of those folks were around. I know Georgia Southern fans will remember some of those names. It was cool to strike that match again. You know, it was kind of like, if you're going to play one of these games, it might as well mean something, right? And you flash that forward to ending the year on a rivalry note, it's going to be awfully exciting. And I also feel for you guys at this time of year. I know that your November, in my house, November was a four-letter word. Back before I decided to go do something else. And I know you guys are grinding hard, but you got an exciting basketball team to follow. I know that's a big part of it. And you guys are putting in the mileage and putting in the work. And it shows, as I've been watching the last few weeks, you guys are putting on some great stuff. And I know it's hard to do at this time of year. Not everybody that should say thank you does say thank you. But I say, having bled that blood before, brother, thank y'all for what you're doing and bringing what you are bringing to the Eagle fan base and to everybody that's trying to follow all these programs all over the direction in November. It does mean something to the folks that are tuning in, and I hope that you guys get that recognition for not only doing it, but doing it well.
Man, I know what you were trying to butter him up for. What's he trying to butter up us?
That's a lot of soft soap,
good
DJ.
Night. Good.
So there are a few places that you could hit on the food trail on the way up here. You know, some old stomping grounds. No, I mean that sincerely. I think that's one of the cool things about us going into this league together was that we brought certainly a rivalry on Saturdays and that kind of thing to it. But it's fun doing this kind of stuff with your friends too. And there are a lot of storylines we get to continue to talk about, even though we may be in different places now, both in this year, but in this league. And I know that will only grow as now the focus of the Sun Belt shifts to the East and all these programs and all these national championships over on this side that we've got to look at in the trophy case as we walk on by.
Finally, before we let you go, you've seen this rivalry from a lot of different perspectives as an alum of App State, as a fan, as a broadcaster, as an ESPN Plus broadcaster now. What are some of the things that you really pull from this rivalry, and what are some of your favorite memories of Georgia Southern App State on the football field? And we've talked about it time and time again. There's been so many times where App's won, Georgia Southern's two, Georgia Southern's won, App's two, and it gets into a game of this game means a whole heck of a lot when you get to later in the season.
Yeah, you know, my first trip to Statesboro was 98, and that was a top five matchup. Yep. That was one of those classic Adrian Peterson games. I tell you, for my money back then, J.R. Revere was the tougher dude to deal with. And all those defensive players, I mean, the whole entire team. You know, App could never get a move in edgewise back in 98. That playoff game in 2001, you know, App got blasted up at Kid Brewer Stadium, thought they might have a chance to go to Statesboro and right the ship, and that was not the case. But then, you know, you remember the 99 game when App knocked off number one. Yep. Did that a couple of times over the course of the rivalry. I think those are always special. I enjoyed seeing what complimentary players came out of some of those things. I mentioned J.R. Revere, you know, the game where Adrian Peterson's 100-yard streak was stopped. I swear J.R. Revere is still running somewhere on campus right now because he was the guy, right? He had like 3 million yards that day. And there was always somebody, you know, whether it was a Jamal Jackson, whether it was a DeAndre Presley or Armani Edwards trucking my man at the goal line with the stiff arm that turns into a meme that we see every time or every year at this time up this way. That's what this rivalry is about, you know, and I think it is proper and quite honestly necessary that we respect it because both sides have had their day. It makes us better when both sides have our day. And it makes it, you know, I think it's also to be said, and I don't think I'm saying this from a necessarily a position of bias. The minute that App State and Georgia Southern walked into the Sun Belt, they had the best rivalry in the league.
Without a doubt.
And I would take that up against anything that currently exists or existed at that time. So, this sells tickets. It keeps fans of multi-generations engaged. It gives us an opportunity, like me today in my class, to sit there and go, App State, Georgia Southern this weekend. A couple of the students are juiced. I'm like, let me just tell you how it used to be. And I'm staying on a whole thing. So they're still bored with that conversation, but it got me fired up for what's in store Saturday and what names we'll write into the record books in terms of this rivalry as the ones that dictated the terms of this meeting here in 2021.
You said something in that we've talked about a couple of times with this rivalry, and there's a lot of different rivalries around college football, whether it's just two teams hate each other, there's bad blood, but this is one, and one of the few that I think, yeah, they call it hate week around here, but at the end of the day, this one is built on respect.
I think you hate that you like them, and you don't want to admit it.
Like, you hate that you want to go out to dinner with him after you hopefully beat him. Like, it's just built on respect.
Breakfast and he stiff-armed me on that. So,
I did not stiff-arm you. I need to figure things out first. Yeah, we're coming up from Atlanta.
Well, you've already got the parking.
Yeah. Here we go. But no, I think you respect what you want to be, right? And I think that there was a point in time where App State respected, you know, before they won their first one, Six Flags That Flew Over Statesboro. That was what App aspired to be for years. And to be honest, Georgia Southern was the team that kept getting in the way, whether it was, you know, positioning at the beginning of the or you know, in the middle of the race to keep you from seeds, or maybe being that team that knocks you out of the playoffs in 2001. I still think that, you know, the national championship opportunity that would have been in 05 is the game that I wish that would have happened that never did, you know, and those two seem to be on a crash course. Furman was in that mix there as well, I believe.
Number one that year.
It could have been fun. Could have been fun. So I would say to close that out, though, you know, just know that there are no goalposts aimed at any buses this week. Remember, burritos are to be eaten.
So you say.
And hopefully we can get out of this with just another great chapter and a longtime rivalry and many more to come after this.
David, really appreciate you taking some time. Go ahead and turn the heat on for us before we get up there. But it's going to be a lot of fun getting to catch up with you on Saturday. Looking forward to it, bud.
Snow flurries flying in the air currently. We'll try awesome. To dust those out of the way and get you ready for Saturday by the time kickoff rolls around. So y'all have a safe trip up, and we'll see you Saturday.
Thanks David. Once again, that's the ESPN Plus voice for Appalachian State as David Jackson. One of the best in this business. He's been a lot of fun, a really good friend ever since I've been a part of Georgia Southern, and I know it goes back to your Citadel days, getting to know DJ. And
there's a special place in my heart for that guy.
Oh, no doubt.
And I'll tell you about my first year at the Citadel in 2011. I had never met David, so I had just known him as the guy that went nuts when App beat Michigan in 2007. I'd never seen him before. So he walks into the press box at Johnson Haygood Stadium. I'm thinking, okay, let's get to meet the...
Speaking of which, we need to find Brownie in all of this sometime this weekend.
We would need a separate podcast on a separate Facebook page.
Yeah, and maybe some separate names.
Anyway, that game, that 2011 game, the Citadel and Appalachian State... App got up 49-14 in the third quarter. The Citadel scored four unanswered touchdowns to get it to 49-42. App got the ball back with about 6 minutes or so left. They ran out the clock. They actually had a chance to score, but they took a knee. Jerry Moore was gracious enough to take a knee. I think it was inside the 10-yard line to end that game. But that was my first experience playing App State, and the Citadel-App State was a nice little rivalry for the 3 years that I was there, but it has no way to hold a candle to what App and Georgia Southern have had. Look, you can go back to 1932 if you want to, but since 1987, the version of the Ice Bowl that these two would like to remember in the playoffs that year when Irk came out of the locker room with a t-shirt and shorts on and it was negative, whatever it was, they sprayed the field with water so it was like an ice rink. Raymond Gross couldn't get any traction. They won 19-0. Really, ever since then, this game has meant something. Now, they didn't join the same league until 93. They've met every year since then, and that's over two different conferences.
Yeah.
That's something that probably gets lost in this, but like David said, one had to get through the other more often than not. I think it was a stretch of 16 out of 17 years. One of the two won a league championship in the SoCon. You hate that you love them.
Yeah.
You're not going to admit that,
no.
But there is a reason why there is so much respect between the two, because each has their own way of doing right.
No, and we've talked about it, and off mic, we've talked about it with different people around the league. The Georgia Southern App State rivalry may be one of, if not the best, in the group of five.
Yeah.
It's at least in the conversation if it's not at the top. Because of the history like you just talked about, because of the respect that we talked about with David, and just the connection between the two. I know it's 6 hours between the two, but you play them in everything. And it's one of the few rivalries that goes across all sports. Because it seems like even basketball, there's been years where one team's up here, one's down here, what have you. But it seems like all sports, Georgia Southern and App State, there's a little bit extra.
For so long, Georgia Southern was that independent team. So they were having to do what a BYU or a Notre Dame does now. You're scheduling your full schedule every year. You don't get eight of them taken care for you by the league that you're in. So until Georgia Southern joined the SoCon in 93, they needed to find these opponents. And for a while, look, it was the James Madisons, it was the Marshall, it was Middle Tennessee, it was Bethune, it was Florida A&M. It was teams that you would see certain years, but you knew that when you joined a league,
you probably weren't going to see very many of those.
Yeah.
Now, lucky enough that Marshall was in the SoCon, which I'm so psyched that they're coming back in,
yeah,
2 years. I think that Huntington is, that's an awesome trip. Every sport, I'm really going to enjoy that, and them coming here, vice versa, and all that. But to really establish that first true rivalry, because every time they play, there is something to play for.
Yeah.
Close games, blowouts, number one, playoffs, big moments, long touchdowns, dramatic finishes. Some of the best games here, some of the best games there have been between the two.
Yeah.
In the history of the programs.
And we were talking about it before we went on tonight, how it's strange. You'll remember, and you and I probably, because we're weirdos,
It's true.
We remember stuff from random games, but it seems like App State games, especially football, you remember a lot more than other ones.
2015, the laser pointer and the...
Yep.
I
still remember the dude's face when we found him in the stands.
The cafeteria, the ambulance deal, the fire. It was just...
Yep.
A league waste fumble return in 2016 on the bad snap in 17, how Tyler Bass kept Georgia Southern in the game until the fourth quarter. And I think I could tell you snap for snap what happened in the win in 2018 here.
Yeah.
I think I could go from the time that the teams took the field and App let the students know that they could hear them when that game was over. I know it was 7-7 in the second quarter, but that game was over as soon as App accepted the fact that Georgia Southern's fans and their students were in their ears that much. And I can just remember vivid details when these two were on the field against each other, because it's just that good of theater.
It's going to be another edition this weekend. Georgia Southern, Appalachian State, 2:30 the kickoff from atop the mountain. Do have one question coming in on Facebook Live. Ooh. Sean wanting to ask, can we request that this game be scheduled at the end of the year, each year, to ESPN? And the thing that kind of gets lost in translation a lot, the league sets the schedule, and then ESPN decides where games get picked up. And so, good on the Sun Belt for having this one, seeing what it was last year.
Mm-hmm.
When it wasn't scheduled this way because of COVID. Again, it was supposed to be a midweek game. Because of COVID, it had to be pushed back to a Saturday at the end of the season, which turned out to be phenomenal for both sides. The league saw that, said, that's what we need to grow the brand of the Sun Belt. And it's like David was talking about, both of these teams, both of these programs, are what bolsters the Sun Belt to what it is going to turn into, one of the top, if not the top, G5 league. Having it as a game at the end of the regular season, I think, means a little bit more because, again, and hopefully when Georgia Southern comes back in the next year or two, being able to be fighting for the top of the Eastern Division.
Yes.
Up until Georgia State beat Coastal Carolina without Grayson McCall a couple of weeks ago, you were still talking about they had to go through Georgia Southern to get to the Sun Belt Championship game.
Correct.
And I know that is not what Appalachian State wanted to do by any stretch of the imagination. It doesn't matter what the record for Georgia Southern is, because you can throw records out the window. And I know that's a cliche that a lot of rivalries use, but Georgia Southern could be 0-12 going into this game. App State be 12-0, and it's going to be a dogfight. I promise you.
And you've also got the possibility in terms of scheduling flexibility that this game could have been moved to linear TV if necessary.
Yeah.
I think back to the end of the 2016 season, Georgia Southern was playing Troy at Paulson Stadium.
Yep.
Troy was playing for a Sun Belt championship. What happened was that game got bumped to ESPN2. So everybody got to see it that day when the Eagles on senior day defeated a really good Troy team back in 2016. Now, that's not going to happen this weekend, but the fact that this is at the end of the season, and more often than not, it's going to be for that East Division.
Yeah. And I think it's when Georgia Southern's able to get back right and both of these teams are at the top of the East, that's when you see, one, you're going to see that, David just talked about it, there's 100 tickets left. We're sitting here on Monday.
Georgia Southern is 3-8, and this is going to be a 30,000-plus crowd-attended game.
You see that. ESPN's going to take notice. They took notice last year enough to put it back on a Saturday at the end of the season this year for the Sun Belt. ESPN takes notice of that in the coming years, and I think this is one that year after year, and I know it's rivalry weekend across. You've got Georgia, Georgia Tech, Florida State, Florida. You got so many different rivalries across the country, but this is a big game, not just in the Sun Belt. This is a big, really good football game across the country.
this will make you a fan of college football if you, for some reason, are not a fan of college football. Look, Ohio State and Michigan is also this weekend, and that is the game, which it's going to generate the most nationally, as it should.
Yeah.
That's a matchup of two teams fighting for spots in the college football playoff. But if you happen to trickle down and want to learn more about a rivalry that is just as intense, but maybe not on as big a scale, these two aren't going to mess around.
No, and I could see this one 100% in years coming up. This become the nightcap of rivalry weekend and turn into a 7 o'clock, 7:30 kickoff on ESPN2 to kind of wrap up rivalry Saturday.
I would be a fan of that.
So, that's not me saying it's going to happen. That's me saying I could see it happening in the not-too-distant future.
I know that this season was hoped to be much better than it has been, but realizing that your top rival is at the end of this week to finish this year, one more time to have a smile on your face instead of just a frustrating end of the season, even though Coach Helton is at the end of the week, he's officially going to take over as soon as the season ends, and we're excited about that. This is one more time to watch this group play. This is one more time to watch these two teams play. This is one more time to simply watch the best rivalry in the group of five.
2:30, the kickoff from Kid Brewer Stadium in Boone, North Carolina. It's going to be cold. It's probably going to snow. Just go ahead and buckle up for it.
Hats and coats, hats and coats, hats and coats.
And then some more. Yes. But we'll be on the air starting at 12:30 with the Cutwater Spirits tailgate show. Frank, Russ, Terry, and myself will get it going. And then Danny, Terry, and Russ will give you the play-by-play story starting at 2:30 with the kickoff from Kid Brewer Stadium. Until this weekend, for the voice of the Eagles, Danny Reed, this is Colin Lacey saying so long, everybody.
You've been listening to Inside Eagle Nation, powered by Learfield, the official podcast of Georgia Southern Athletics.